debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. On the line with us for the hour is Congressman Ro Khanna. He represents the 17th District of California, more or less the Silicon Valley area. He is the vice in the U.S. House of Representatives. He is the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Khanna, khanna.house.gov is his website. His Twitter handle is Rep. Ro Khanna. First of all, Congressman Khanna, welcome back to the program. I'm hearing and seeing news stories popping up, particularly out of California, that people want you to run for governor. What's the deal here?
No. The issue is the state delegation to the convention, and Bernie carried the state, and they want a Bernie person to chair the state convention to the delegation to the state convention. And so there was a petition that hundreds of Bernie delegates have signed to say whether I can chair it. And I've said I'm not going to campaign for that, but I do think that Bernie did carry the state, and his priority should be reflected in the state delegation, and I'm happy to do it if selected.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Although I think you'd make a great governor, too.
I'm happy in Congress. I think Gavin's doing a very good job, all things considered.
Yeah, apparently my misunderstanding was that Newsom, the current governor, would be the one who heads the state delegation. Is that it? And people want you instead?
I think so. Ceremonially, a lot of times the governor has done it or a senator has done it, you know, and usually it's just decided in a back room about who should do it. And the rules say that the delegates should really vote for it. And I think a lot of the Bernie delegates feel that given that Bernie carried the state, they want someone who's going to advocate for Medicare for All and free public college and the platform. While it's more symbolic, I do think it makes a difference in terms of the direction of the party.
Well, I think it does, too. And I'd love to have you. I mean, I'm not a Californian, you know, it's not my say, but, you know, having you head up the delegation of one of our largest, in fact, I think it is our largest state, to the DNC and advocate for those, you know, because you weren't you a co-chair of Bernie's campaign?
I was. I was with Nina Turner and Ben Cohen and Carmen Cruz. I was one of the four co-chairs, and as you know, went all over the country for Bernie, and that's where I discovered that there are Tom Hartman listeners in every part of this country, and met many of them. So, I think it would be a great thing to do, even for the Biden campaign. I think it would just make the Bernie delegates feel heard, and California is one of the more progressive states, and the state Bernie carried, and I think we should be very strong in pushing for some of these policies.
Yeah, it would be a good thing. Before we pick up phone calls here, is there anything in particular that's on the top of your mind or your agenda or what you see going forward that you want to highlight for our listeners?
Well, the biggest push this week has been on the Justice and Policing Act. As you may remember, Tom, my bill with Lacey Clay is in there to change the standard of force, that police shouldn't be able to use force just because they think it's reasonable, which is the William Rehnquist standard from 1989. They should have to show that it was absolutely necessary, that they took every possible step before they used force. And that passed the Judiciary Committee this week. And so we're working to make sure we pass it in the House and that we have a strong bill in the House on reforming so many parts of the police violence crisis.
That's great. Okay, let's pick up some phone calls here. Dave in Richland, Washington, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hello, Congressman. Are you concerned at all about the Trump appointee to the head of the post office? Do you think that they might somehow try to sabotage it so that it'll be down, so it can't, people will not be able to vote by mail?
Yeah, but I'm concerned. I mean, especially when you have the president tweeting out that his big concern is if people vote by mail, he's going to lose. He knows that if people vote, he loses. And I think they feel that their only possibility to winning is to prevent people from voting by mail. And so they're going to sue in states. They're going to try to put pressure in every way. And I think we have to, in Congress, be very vigilant to make sure we have a fair election.
Lou in Pueblo, Colorado. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hey, good morning, Ro. Question I have is, you know, I live in different areas, and pretty much the Trump voters that I talk to, they live in a total fantasy world. They've told me that, you know, COVID-19 is a Chinese plot, and they're not going to take any stinking vaccine because that's a plot, too. How do we address this? How do we get the truth through to them? Is Congress doing anything in that direction, or can you?
Well, it's a very big challenge. I mean, you have the politicization of science. I mean, Fauci has been on television saying that he doesn't understand how people are not listening to science in terms of the benefits of a vaccine would have in terms of just wearing masks. And it's a very difficult situation where the politicization has been exacerbated by Trump, who has tweeted basically to disregard science. And so you have people literally in the Congress, Republicans, and a machoism walking around not wearing masks. And in fact, the Speaker had to say that they couldn't attend hearings and order the Sergeant-at-Arms to kick them out if they're not wearing masks and putting staff and others at risk. But we just have to have as many elected officials and hopefully some reasonable Republicans talk about the need to wear masks and take basic steps for safety.
Jim in Sacramento, California, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I'm in Matsui's district, not yours, but I've seen you on so many things. You're really doing a great job promoting progressivism. I just wanted to mention on the Supreme Court decision, the Roberts Court has based their decision on a violation of due process. And by not the president not holding hearings or doing any investigation before making such a change affecting 1 million people or close to 1 million people, he's violated due process. Virtually
you're talking
everything
DACA,
that he's
Jim?
Been doing falls into that. I'm sorry?
You're talking DACA?
Yes, DACA.
Yeah.
This decision
so your question.
Is clearly showing a violation of due process, but if you expand on that, you look at all of his presidential orders, or many of them, the same thing's going on. And this is a violation, direct violation of the Constitution, guaranteeing citizens due process. Can you go in?
Let's get the congressman's thoughts on this. Thank you, Jim.
Jim, I agree with you completely. I mean, the government promised these DACA kids that they would be able to have legal status, and they're revoking a promise we made. And this is why I've said that every time Trump claims to be for law and order, we ought to remind the American people that he's been the most anti-law and order president in modern times. I mean, he has undermined systematically the law and our constitutional order in almost everything he has done. So the person who would restore the rule of law are the Democrats, and I think we do need to make that clear to people.
Yeah. He tweeted this morning that basically the Supreme Court said, you just filled out the paperwork wrong and he's going to fill it out right and resubmit it. Do you think he's going to succeed in shutting down DACA?
I don't, and I think he wants it more as a political issue than anything else. And I hope people will apply, the new folks who need to be part of DACA, the court if they can, and they should do it expeditiously. I think this is just him playing politics.
Yeah, and stay with it. Got it. Congressman Ro Khanna taking your calls for the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back with more of your calls for the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Congressman Khanna's website, Khanna, K-H-A-N-N-A, .house.gov. You can tweet him at Rep. Ro, R-O, Khanna. Hey, Donald Trump has said some pretty outrageous and in many cases just screamingly racist things over the years and very, very much trafficked in racist tropes, saying things like, you know, all Republicans must remember what they're witnessing here, a lynching, speaking about people attacking him for the things he's said, or I'm the least racist person you've ever encountered, I don't have a racist bone in my body, which is something that racists always say. What has happened to the respect for authority, the fear of retribution? Bring back the death penalty and bring back our police, says Donald Trump. You know, why do we need more Haitians? Why are we having people from all these asshole countries come here? We should have more people from places like Norway, says Donald Trump. Anyhow, the whole list of them is posted as a video over at TomHartman.com. Check it out. Thanks so much. James in Hollywood, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Good morning, gentlemen. Congressman, I wonder if you can put up two standalone bills, real simple, so all the American people, and the first one is $12 billion for the post office, save the post office, and have Pelosi bring it up immediately, pass the bill, and publish the results in WAPO and Wall Street Journal and every local newspaper, Republicans who voted against it, saving the post office. And two, a 50-state mail-in ballot option. Do Republicans want American citizens to risk their life to go vote, or an option to vote from their kitchen table? Keep them simple and make the votes public, and they become campaign winners. I think if you can keep it simple, no American citizen has seen a two-sentence bill. Just put it up, pass it, and go. And I think it's a winner.
James, let's get the congressman's thoughts on that. Thank you.
James, it's a good idea. I mean, we have passed bills to have mail-in voting and funding for that as part of the coronavirus relief. We have passed funding to support the postal office and keep it open. But I think having a standalone bill that has an up and down vote to put people on record is a good idea, and I will suggest it to the caucus.
Scott in Oakland, California, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hi, good morning. I'm calling about the need for a Truth and Reconciliation Commission after Trump is gone, particularly with a lot of this violence from the right. What happened in Ben Lomond on the 6th was the deputy sheriff Gutzwiller being murdered by cut with his Carrillo, this Air Force sergeant who was an elite security officer in the Air Force, active duty, who also killed the officer in Oakland during the Black Lives Matter protest there to try to blame it on the left. I'm very concerned that this right-wing violence is going to go unexposed, that they're going to we're not going to be able to have the truth behind it. And I would particularly look at the Dallas BLM shooting in 2016. Very suspicious. They captured three people escaping that were wearing body armor. They were held. The chief of police reported.
Scott, we're almost out of time. What's your question for the congressman? I'm sorry.
Are we going to have Truth and Reconciliation to expose the right wing's bootlegging of violence into left protests?
Got it. Thank you, Scott.
I appreciate it. Barbara Lee has a bill. It's called a Truth and Reconciliation Bill, and it's all about how do we move forward on issues of race, how do we move forward on issues of recognizing the dignity of every American. And so I'd take a look at the bill that she's introducing.
Makes perfect sense. It would be Barbara Lee proposing that. She is brilliant.
She really is.
Congressman Ro Khanna taking your calls for the hour. We'll be right back with more of your calls for Congressman Khanna in just a moment. The Vice Chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Congressman Ro Khanna taking your calls for the hour. And Catherine in Burlington, Vermont, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Yes, hi, Congressman. I'm calling to ask you if you've heard the Bank for International Settlements located in Basel, Switzerland.
Is it a bank for that or in Basel? Or?
Bank for International Settlements.
It's the clearinghouse that banks all around the world use when they do interbank transactions. Isn't that, Catherine? Isn't that what you're talking about?
No. It's a little deeper than that. Our Federal Reserve, our privately owned Federal Reserve, is always indebted to them. Along with 55 other countries, their central banks are indebted to them. They make a ton of money on wars and so forth. And I stitched this together with JFK.
Catherine, I'm going to stop this right here. I think we're just going down a rabbit hole. Do you want to comment on it at all, Congressman Khanna?
You know, I don't know about what this bank is. I mean, I would just say in the case of the Fed, where they print money, we have fiat currency, and that may lead to devaluation of the currency. And, of course, we still have other countries lend us money, but that's really a monetary policy decision that's fairly independent of other central banks.
Yeah. Sarah, in Oxford, Ohio, you have a question for Congressman Khanna?
Yes. I was wondering if any other states have considered doing what our governor here in Ohio has considered doing the past few days, and that is state license issuing to the police officers, which means there'll be like an oversight committee watching them. Their license can be revoked without charges being on them or anything like the normal, like the way we have it now.
Just like physicians.
I'm surprised that not a lot of people are even talking about, you know, what he said. And, you know, I don't really care for the governor at all, but I was really surprised over this idea. Sounds awesome.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, no, I think, sir, that having an oversight board and having more accountability is definitely one part of what we need. I mean, I think we need to make sure police officers can be sued and get rid of qualified immunity. We need to change the standard of force. We need to have much more de-escalation as part of the training. But having a community oversight boards, I think, are part of the solution.
Margaret in Brooklyn, New York, you are on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Oh, great. Thank you, gentlemen. Okay, I'm very worried about the timing of mail-in ballots for the general election because it takes time to get the ballot, to fill out the ballot, to mail the ballot. And I'm afraid if it's not done in a timely manner with a lot of lead time for people, that things will be mailed and they will arrive too late to count. Is the Congress doing all that they can on a nationwide basis to make sure those ballots count?
I agree with you. I share your concerns. We passed in the coronavirus recent recovery bill money for mail-in ballots, and we're trying to push as hard as we can. But look, the president's not going to sign that. The Senate's not going to be for that. I mean, the president is in an interview today said that his big concern is that people would be able to vote by mail, and that's what's going to cost them the election. So he is fighting through lawsuits and every means possible to stop people from being able to vote by mail. We saw they tried to do that in Wisconsin. We won nonetheless. And we're going to have to be in the courts. We're going to have to be fighting with Secretary of State to make sure everyone gets to vote. And it's a state-by-state battle.
Come on, in Dayton, Ohio, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, gentlemen. And I want to know, actually, why I have not heard the Progressive Caucus speak out against this Bay of Pigs type of invasion that was recently perpetrated on Venezuela. And Pompeo saying that those Americans who were captured in this invasion, we have to get them back. When actually they are, they broke the law by trying to invade that country. We have no right to go in there and try to rescue them.
I agree with that. I think that I have spoken out. I said that, well, Maduro has committed a lot of human rights atrocities and is not a good actor. But for the Americans to go in and try to have engineer Guaido to become the leader is only going to result in a greater backlash in Venezuela. And what we ought to do is defer to Mexico and Uruguay and the Pope. We're trying to have a mediated settlement. That is the best thing for the country instead of our active intervention.
Congressman, we just have 45 seconds to the break. Do you see any kind of, how do you think the situation with Venezuela is going to play out? They have the world's largest reserves of oil. That makes it kind of a high stakes game, doesn't it?
It does. And I think this is a case where the right policy, human rights policy, of encouraging the diplomacy and the settlement with some kind of ability to have different parts of parties represented in government is also in our national interest. I mean, what we do when we go in and try to support a particular leader is we basically give Maduro his talking points. He goes in and he says, look, the Americans are coming in and trying to pick your leader. It's counterproductive, and yet we keep making a similar mistake around the world.
Yeah, and we've been doing it for 100 years, it seems. Congressman Ro Khanna with us, the vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He represents the 17th District of California in the U.S. House of Representatives. Khanna, K-H-A-N-N-A .house.gov is his website. Exposing the con in conservative, it's the Tom Hartman Program. Congressman Ro Khanna taking your calls for the hour. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Today, we're reading about Thunderdome politics, an uncivil war taking back our democracy in an age of Trumpian disinformation and Thunderdome politics by Greg Sargent, the Washington Post columnist. This is from his chapter on voter suppression. It's page 37. Republicans and Democrats inhabit different political realities, as mentioned in a previous chapter. But there are certain facts about our politics that are just objectively true. One of them is this. Generally speaking, efforts to make it harder to vote are almost always pushed by Republicans. You cannot understand what is happening in American politics right now without recognizing this stark and very fundamental difference between the two major political parties. During this decade, procedural hurdles were put into place in around 20 states
that in some manner or other have made it harder to vote or to register to vote, or have undone previous efforts to make voting or registering easier, or have otherwise threatened serious disenfranchisement. Most of them were the creation of Republican lawmakers and officials. The difference in the two parties' national platforms for 2016 tells the story. The GOP platform champions additional hurdles that are absurdly disproportionate to the phantom abuse it alleges, while the Democratic platform champions multiple specific ways to make it easier to vote, not harder. The most common and controversial of methods used by Republicans to suppress Democratic turnout is the requirement that would-be voters present identification at the polls. The game here tends to turn on requiring forms of ID that some groups are less likely to have, making participation harder for them. Other restrictions include techniques like cutting back on early voting and making it harder to register, both of which have, in recent years, been instituted in multiple states. Republicans who have passed laws making it harder to vote have tended to claim such measures are necessary to protect against, quote, voter fraud. We'll look at this in more detail below, but for now, note that most of the states that have passed such measures did so while under Republican control. As New York University political scientist Samuel Isikoff has memorably put it, the single predictor necessary to determine whether a state will impose voter access restrictions is whether Republicans control the ballot access process. Scholars trace the modern era of warfare over election rules to the intensely contested presidential election of 2000, in which a divided Supreme Court halted the recount in Florida, throwing the presidency to George W. Bush. The closeness and partisan acrimony of that contest, combined with the intense national focus on election rules that accompanied the court battle over it, helped persuade both parties to invest much more attention and energy on those rules. As a result, both the implementation of measures restricting the ballot and the legal battles over them have intensified in recent years. A brief glance at the surprising history of voter ID laws begins to tell the story of this tightening. In the 1970s, several states implemented voter ID measures, but all of them provided for ways that voters without the proper ID could cast a ballot. By 2000, there were 14 such laws, and they had been implemented by politicians in both parties. But by the mid-2000s, amid rising post-2000 acrimony, a handful of red states began implementing voter ID laws that the nonpartisan National Conference of State Legislatures described as, quote, strict, meaning that they make it easy to disqualify those who don't pass muster. After one of those laws in Indiana was challenged and then upheld in 2008 by the Supreme Court, an escalation began that gained momentum in the Obama era. From 2010 onward, the adoption of voter ID laws in general, and of strict ones in particular, accelerated. Though a handful were blocked in the courts, as of this writing, a total of 34 states have voter ID laws in effect, 24 that are deemed non-strict and 10 that are deemed strict. The strict ones are in red states or in swing states where they were implemented by Republicans. The story is very similar if you evaluate the state's voting rules in a broader way, by including not just voter ID measures, but also cutbacks to early voting and restrictions on registration. Here the trend is just as pronounced. After the 2010 elections, the Brennan Center for Justice documented a sharp rise in efforts to pass such measures in the state legislatures across the country. Not all these efforts bore fruit, but many did. By the time voting took place in Election Day 2016, some 14 states had these new restrictions in place for the first time in a presidential election. This narrative contains some important truths. Some of the forms that these restrictions on voting access have taken in recent years are diabolically obvious in their efforts to keep constituencies supportive of Democrats from voting. Still others boast the distinction of being more insidiously designed and thus less obvious in their intentions. The book is An Uncivil War by Greg Sargent of The Washington Post.
Congressman Ro Khanna taking your calls for the hour here on the Tom Hartman program. Kenji in Napa, California, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hi, Tom. Congressman, how are you doing? I have a question. I was wondering if anyone has ever considered an automation tax as a source of funding for both Medicare for All and UBI. It'd be kind of like a payroll tax on robots.
You know, Bill Gates, I think, has proposed a robot tax. I mean, I do think that having some tax, if it's tied to helping people get education, employment, makes sense. I mean, on Medicare for All, there are, of course, so many ways to pay for it. Most notably, you could charge corporations money that they won't have to give to private insurance companies. So I don't know if you necessarily a tax on robots for that, but in terms of having some tax on robots to make up for the decline in employment, that's definitely worth exploring.
Ed in Belfair, Washington, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Representative Khanna. My question has to do with the slush fund, the $500 billion or plus that Mnuchin has. After this administration is voted out, are we going to have a full accounting where that money went to? And is there any chance of us ever getting any of that money back? Thank you.
Well, it's outrageous that they are not telling us who the money is going to with the PPP funds, the small businesses there, and they're not being transparent in who the money is going to go to into the $500 billion fund. Many of these corporations that are getting money spent their money on stock buybacks. So I think that was one of the really terrible parts of the relief efforts. And we in Congress are continuing to push for disclosure, transparency, and having taxpayers get some equity or some returns for the money we've lent these large corporations.
Jeff in Portland, Oregon, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hey, good morning, Tom and Congressman Khanna. Thanks for the town hall. Congressman, this week Tom's been asking exactly when was it that the Republican Party declared war on democracy and sold out wholesale to the oligarchy. And in my opinion, regardless of when it started after the anti-democratic onslaught of these last three and a half years, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that this 2020 election, general election, needs to be seen as maybe the last stand for democracy. Of course, Joe Biden's going to have to run a progressive campaign to inspire people, tying racial justice to economic and environmental justice as well as criminal justice. But beyond that, we're going to need an immediate mobilization of people to register voters and a massive effort to get out the vote and protect the vote. And to that point, Congressman, how concerned are you with the Republican plan to send 50,000 operatives to polling sites in 15 states to supposedly watch over the voting, something they were banned from doing for 36 years from 82 to 2018 because of a blatant and persistent record of intimidating voters, especially people of color?
Yeah, this is how William Rehnquist made his chops.
I think Trump realizes that he's down 8-10 points in the polls. He's down in every swing state. He's got a pandemic, which he has totally botched. He's got an economic recovery, which he has botched. And so he realizes a fair election, he loses. And so the only way he could possibly win, and he's tweeting out today, is if he suppresses the vote. And that is part of their strategy. And it's going to be a huge fight to make sure they don't succeed at doing that.
David in Columbus, Ohio, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hello, Congressman. My concern is that the Democrats take a comprehensive approach. I think Bernie was doing this. I think Elizabeth Warren was doing this somewhat. But more progressive values and more things that benefit the average voter. This worked in West Virginia, works in other southern states. I wonder why it's not coming out strongly. So you're separating strongly between Republicans and Democrats.
I agree with you. I think we have to talk about basic policies that are going to improve people's lives. That means giving everyone health care. That means making sure that everyone has a decent wage, that they can be part of a union, that they can have education for their kids and afford that, to have massive infrastructure spending. These are the things we have to stand for, and we have to be very concrete and keep emphasizing it.
Howard in New York City, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Yeah, hi, thanks. I don't understand why Nancy Pelosi doesn't impeach Donald Trump. Now, there are two good reasons, the relationship with China and also Lafayette Square.
Well, the fact is that we have tried to get rid of Trump. We didn't succeed in the Senate. At this point, we have to just defeat him in the ballot box.
Zach in North Hollywood, California. Zach, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Good morning, gentlemen. I wonder what would happen, either of you can respond to this, if Joe Biden came right out and gave something the voters, something to really sink their teeth into. Four things. Number one, make it mandatory mail-in voting in all states. No time limits for the count or the recount. Number two, abolish Citizens United, which is an affront to anyone's basic understanding of democracy. Number three, abolish the Electoral College on the grounds that it's obsolete. And number four, and maybe the most important, is abolish the fake Nixon OLC memo in the DOJ that puts the executive above the law and invites abuse of power.
Zach, I'm sympathetic. I think Biden would do all of those things. He'd fight for all those things. The House would do those things. But the challenge is that you currently have a Senate and a president who aren't going to do it. But in terms of what Biden should promise the American people, in terms of enfranchising them, protecting the right to vote, I think you're absolutely right about the things you point to.
Michael in Bronx, New York. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Congressman. Very important I called in because it is reported that Trump issued a tweet which many see as a threat of harm and even a death threat to protesters. I understand we have a problem with looters and so forth, but even to the peaceful protesters. He did not want anyone protesting outside his Tulsa event, and he's threatening violence. He says you're not going to be treated like you were in New York City or anything like that. And I sense, given the history of his tweets, his rhetoric, please tell me, Congressman, that you, Nancy Pelosi, and the Congress would be able to take action against Trump, even if it means arresting him and treating him like any other criminal, citing exigent circumstances.
And Congressman, here's the actual tweet that Trump tweeted out. Any protesters, anarchists, agitators, looters, or lowlifes who are going to Oklahoma, please understand you will not be treated like you have been in New York, Seattle, or Minneapolis. It will be a much different scene! Exclamation mark. Your thoughts?
Well, I had seen that tweet and it's horrifying. I mean, he's basically inciting potential violence against peaceful protesters, which is the hallmark, of course, of American democracy. And what we have to do is, I think the journalists have a big obligation, those of us in Congress have an obligation to speak out. All I can say is when he tried this stunt outside the White House holding up the Bible, his numbers dropped 5 to 6 points in the polls. And so it is something that the American people will not put up with. But we have to be vigilant, speak out. And I am concerned about the violence that could take place.
Yeah, there are over on Twitter, there's a lot of people who are talking about reporting that tweet to Twitter and asking them to, because, you know, saying that it promotes violence. It's amazing
stuff. For listening to Tom Hartman, visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Khanna, khanna.house.gov is his website. You can tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman. Jay in St. Petersburg, Florida. You're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
It's an honor to be on with you, Tom and Ro. I think you supported this bill, but there's a bill in since 2009 called the 21st Century CCC Act. I think it would be a great program to bring back as a national service when the coronavirus ends, and to get our young people jobs in the national service that would teach them job skills and get them going on in life. And I'm just wondering if there was just an Outdoors Act passed by the Senate, would this dovetail in with this program, and would you support it yourself? Thank you.
Yeah, I would definitely support the CCC program, and I think it would be good to get young people involved in public service and understanding the importance of our environment or land or
air or water and treating that with respect. I've also proposed, along with Senator Warren, a digital works program building on the works Public Works Administration and the New Deal. But now we need so many people to do contact tracing, to do digital tasks. Why can't we help hire a lot of young people and people in mid-careers to be able to do that and put them back to work?
Gordon in Sacramento, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Oh, it's such an honor, Tom, to be on your show. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. My dad is 94 years old, and he's a veteran on the tail end of World War II, and then he re-upped for Korea and served his time in Korea when the Army was desegregated by Truman. But he was underserved, and I'm sure a lot of men of color his age were underserved by the Veterans Administration due to the systematic racism that also linked through the Veterans Administration during that period. Will you guys, if you win the election and take over the majority, revisit that of those soldiers of color that really weren't served well by the Veterans Administration? Because there's not many of them left. Thank you.
Yes, I'm happy to. And I think thank you for raising this issue. Thank you for your father's service. If you write to our office, we're happy to look into it in more detail. You can just go to my website, Ro Khanna. But I absolutely think we need to do right by those people who served the country, black soldiers in particular, and people of color in some certain cases, who did not get treated with dignity in the way they were deserved.
Yeah, they got screwed with the GI Bill, too. A little more comprehensive thoughts on what could be done about that?
Well, I think the GI Bill, they served. They didn't get educational benefits in many cases because universities didn't accept them, even if they had the educational benefits. They didn't get housing benefits because of redlining. And this is why I'm for reparations of some form to communities that have been denied basic benefits. And in cases where you can trace specific exclusion with individuals, I think they ought to be compensated.
Yeah. Do you think that could pass? I mean, obviously right now it wouldn't get past Mitch McConnell. But do you think that there's a broad sense in the Democratic caucus, the larger Democratic Party in the House, for doing something like that?
I do. I think that the H.R. 40 is a good start, which is a commission to look at reparations. And my hope is more and more Democrats at least will get on that. And I do see an increase after the George Floyd killing. I see it more people at least being open to it.
Great. Hey, Tom Hartman here. I have a new book out. It's called The Hidden History of Monopolies, How Big Business Destroyed the American Dream, and Ralph Nader wrote the foreword. It's available for pre-order wherever you find fine books. So we've got a new video up over at TomHartman.com, and this is about just a totally bizarre story about these three guys with no VA experience, not even veterans, who are all big shots down at Mar-a-Lago, that Donald Trump has put in charge of the Veterans Administration functionally. And their association, one of them is the head of Marvel Entertainment, their association with Johnson & Johnson and the New York Stock Exchange, and Johnson & Johnson, the big drug company, taking this very, very cheap chemical, ketamine, tweaking the molecule a little bit and rolling it out as a new anti-suicide drug, Spravato, that in clinical trials caused six people to die, three of them by suicide, and none of the people taking the placebo to die. And now Trump is telling the VA, you have to buy this highly inflated priced drug from Johnson & Johnson, and the Democrats want to know what's up with the VA crowd, guys. Check it out. It's at TomHartman.com. And welcome back. Congressman Ro Khanna taking your calls for the hour. Steve in Chicago. Steve, you're on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hi, Congressman. Trump's tweets clearly violate the fighting words doctrine that's been upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. I don't care if he's president or not. You cannot incite violence. What can we do to stop this?
Well, Steve, you're right. I mean, under the Brandenburg test, you cannot have speech that either incites violence or encourages unlawful conduct. And the president is basically inciting violence. Now, the question is he talking about the state's use of force? But even the state's use of force is unjustified against peaceful protesters. So I think that those things need to be called out by social media companies. We need to have strong rebuttal. The problem is we don't have Republicans willing to stand up to him. So until we win, it's just a fight for our democratic values.
Terry in Bakersfield, California, are on the air with Congressman Khanna.
Hi, Tom and Ro Khanna. Hi. I have a question concerning the Senate Judiciary Committee that I was watching on Saturday. They had this review of the FBI Russia investigation proceedings. During it, I heard an aide whisper to Lindsey Graham, which was the chair, the White House has an amendment. And Lindsey Graham acknowledged, yeah, okay. Is there supposed to be this collaboration between the White House administration and the Congress committees?
No, I mean, it's, you know, traditionally there's some coordination, but basically you now have the Senate as the extended arm of the Trump White House. I mean, they're all taking their direction from Trump because they fear that Trump is more popular than they are with the Republican base. And, you know, Trump, again, was basically threatening Republican senators, saying, don't depart from me or I'm going to campaign against you. And they fear him.
Dick in Gilmanton, New Hampshire, you're on the air with Congressman Connor.
It's actually Gilmanton Ironworks, but that's okay. It's a real honor and a treat to speak to both of you. The question is, if my memory serves me at all, during the impeachment process, there is a limiting ability on the person being impeached, such as the president, on their ability to govern. And if that's true, then it makes some sense, at least to me, to keep him in impeachment process throughout the duration. Thank you.
I think he's saying that while you're being impeached, you can't run for office. Am I getting that right, Congressman?
Yeah, you know, that's not my understanding, David. I think you can. Obviously, we impeached him. The Senate acquitted him. And I think that the country wouldn't want us to be focused on that as opposed to focused right now on the pandemic and focused on economic recovery. But the good news is that I think for the first time, I get the sense that people are really tired of Trump. Something has changed, turned a corner. They've seen that he has been disastrous in how he's handled these crises.
Steve in Topanga, California. You're on the air with Congressman Connor.
Hi, gentlemen. My question is, the PG&E just got pleaded guilty to murdering all those people with their fire. And corporations have been given personhood, but in a different way. They're not a naturalized person. Wouldn't this be an opportunity for you, Congressman, to exploit this difference in how the Santa Clara against the railroad decision is wrong and corporations aren't naturalized people? Being from California and Northern California, wouldn't this be an opportunity to show the absurdity of Citizens United and to really take this and run it down the road?
Yes, Steve, I agree with you. I mean, PG&E has been awful. I mean, they have underinvested in safety. They've underinvested in the requirements of training that keep people safe. I definitely think this shows that corporations shouldn't be people, and it shows that corporations shouldn't have unlimited political power. It also shows, frankly, that we ought to have a public utility in California and not allow private profits from PG&E to be dictating energy.
Congressman, we just have 35 seconds. What should we be looking at in this coming week? Where should we be focusing our activism, in your opinion?
Tom, two places. One, we still need the Senate to act on the state and local aid that has passed the House. It's unconscionable that they're not acting. It's meaning budget cuts as we speak in many states, and they're increasing unemployment, actually. I mean, for all of the talk of Larry Kudlow that we're paying people not to work, that's actually not true. But what we are doing is cutting state budgets, not giving them money, and that's what's causing a lot of the unemployment. And second, we have to get a real, meaningful structural change on police violence, not just this president's executive order, which was had no teeth in it.
Congressman, thanks so much for dropping by. It's always great having you on.
Always love it. Thanks.
Thank you, Congressman Ro Khanna. Khanna.house.gov is his website. You can tweet him at Rep. Ro Khanna. We'll be back. I'll be taking your calls right after this. Stick around. It's the Tom Hartman Program, fair and only slightly unbalanced.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
And it's the Tom Hartman University Book Club. Today I'm reading from The Prophet's Way, A Guide to Living in the Now. It's actually a compilation of diaries and letters that I sent to friends on travels around the world, and it's kind of a autobiography, I suppose, of sorts. This is from Life in a Teepee. It's on page 25, and it starts with a quote from Lenny Bruce. Every day people are straying away from the church and going back to God.
My best friend through school was Clark Stinson. We met when we were 13, and instead of pursuing the normal pastimes of teenagers, we spent our time studying Sanskrit. We had an old study guide book I found in my father's library, reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead and arguing minutiae from the Bible. Clark's mother was interested in metaphysics and shared a book called Autobiography of a Yogi with us. Years later, when I went to Detroit with her and Clark to attend an initiation in Kriya Yoga by Yogacharya Oliver Black, the oldest living disciple of Yogananda, I recognized Yogananda's Kriya technique as identical to an ancient Coptic exercise Master Stanley had taught us years earlier called the Cobra Breath. I introduced Clark to Master Stanley and Lee, and Clark and I began a serious study of spirituality. We were both in our late teens by then, and Clark had recently married. I was recovering from a painful breakup with a girlfriend, and we agreed that to do our spiritual work best, we should seek isolation. So Clark and his wife bought a teepee, and I bought one, and we three gave away everything else we owned in the world except some clothes and our spiritual books. We bought 100 pounds of wheat, 100 pounds of dried fruits, and basic camping equipment, and got a ride up into Michigan's Upper Peninsula, where an old trapper led us on a three-day trek back into the Chippewa National Forest to a small lake that isn't on most maps. We spent the summer there, Clark and his wife on one side of the lake, me on the other. 3 days a week, we practiced silence and did meditation and prayer every day for hours. I had a pet tachinid fly, a small insect that looks like a honeybee but is actually a fly. When I'd meditate in the morning on my blanket outside my teepee, he'd come and hover just over my right hand as if he were drawing nourishment from me. Sometimes he'd hover there for as much as 20 minutes. Occasionally, he'd land and walk around with careful steps like an astronaut exploring a distant but friendly planet. I also shared my teepee with a large and furry brown and black wolf spider who came out at night as the sun set and picked the sleeping mosquitoes off the canvas on the west side of my teepee. I watched the play of life and death, predator and prey. Here's an odd synchronicity that Carl Jung would have appreciated. I haven't seen a tachinid fly for years, but as I'm typing these words into a laptop computer on my back porch in Atlanta, one just hovered over my left hand for a few moments and then landed. He's here with me as I'm typing, sitting on my hand. One cold and rainy afternoon, Clark and I were walking through the woods looking for berries and edible plants. We'd gotten pretty skilled at identifying what was safe and what wasn't, and were filling a bag with leaves and fruits. This must be what our ancestors lived like, Clark observed, hunting and gathering. Except we're vegetarians, so we're just gathering, I said, joking. But to Clark, it wasn't a joke. Seriously, what we call civilization started when humans started farming. But humans like us were around for tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of years before that, fully conscious, awake, aware, thinking and feeling just like us. But they were hunters and gatherers instead of farmers. I said, without agriculture, there'd be no civilization. It was an interesting thought. Remember Miss Hemmer? Clark said. Miss Hemmer had been our eighth grade biology teacher and one of the best teachers I'd ever known in my life. Clark and I had conspired to make her life difficult, but we also loved her and learned more from her each month than from any of our other teachers in a year. And she was a huge fan of Margaret Mead. Clark said, she said that in primitive societies, there isn't suicide, depression, drug addiction, all that stuff. The noble savage, I said, shivering. I'm skeptical and cold. And the Indians who lived here once were probably cold, too. He shrugged and said, this life seems much more natural to me. At least I had to agree with that. A few days later, Clark came running over to my teepee with his Bible all excited. Look at this, he said, pointing to Genesis 4:2. It says, Cain was a tiller of the ground. The Bible is talking about how the first murderer was also the first farmer. And in the 25th verse, it makes it clear that Abel, the brother who was not the farmer, was the one who loved God the most. So what, I said. It's a classic archetype of the oldest child being the most beloved, but also the one who screws up. It's all over, from Greek mythology to Shakespeare. Don't you see, Clark said? Adam and Eve were gatherers like we are now. They walked around the Garden of Eden and picked up food. But then they tasted of the knowledge of good and evil, of life and death. That's your food supply. You live or die by it. When you live as a gatherer, you live by a whim of nature. If there's no food, you die. When you begin to store up food, you can defy nature and survive a drought. You then have the power to control life, the knowledge of life or death, or good and evil. So the tasting of the apple must have meant that Adam and Eve experimented with agriculture, and in doing so, they defied the God of nature. It's a warning. It's saying that the primitive life of hunting, gathering, and herding was more in accord with nature's way than is agriculture. Clark dove deep into the issue, but I didn't consider it all that important at the time. I couldn't see how when people started farming after the end of the Ice Age, it had been such a bad thing, After all, it brought us modern society and science. Clark, however, was totally certain that agriculture and what he called the organized ones were responsible for the coming death of the earth. The book, The Prophet's Way.
Linwood in Goochland, Virginia. Hey, Linwood, what's up?
Thank you for taking my call. Before I go into my statement, I want to make a quotation by a gentleman by the name of Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. He said this in 1971. If you do not understand white supremacy racism, what it is and how it works, everything else that you understand will only confuse you. And this gentleman is the author of a book called The United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept. Now, we want to talk about the difference between what is a police officer and what is a race soldier. The definition of a police officer for your audience is this as simple. Any person who speaks and acts to promote justice and correctness among all people at all times, in all places, in all areas of activity, including economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. We currently do not have that thing. We currently have what is called race soldiers. These persons are white people who use law in such a manner as to aggressively and defensively establish, maintain, expand, and/or refine the practice of white supremacy. These persons are not police officers. What you're seeing currently are white people who are race soldiers. This entire discussion about the looting and the all this other nonsense about reform, scratch all that. It doesn't need to be reform. The reform that needs to be replaced is white people replacing the system that they created. And that is white supremacy. You, Mr. Hartman, are the problem. Anybody that's a white liberal, white conservative, anybody that's a white person, whether directly or indirectly, that has contributed to the problems of what's happening today, need to actually not talk to non-white people, need to talk to themselves. I mean, it's great that you guys want to get out there and, you know, protest, you know, no justice, no peace, no justice, no peace. No, we don't need to have that. That's just tacky behavior. White people need to solve this problem. We don't need to be holding your hands like your little kids. We're grown people. Solve this problem.
Got it. I can't disagree with anything you said, Linwood. And I, speaking to a majority white audience on this show, I hope that I'm having some positive impact in that direction. Thank you, Linwood. Jared in Downington, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jared, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Nice to talk to you again. For the police discussion, I think we're getting a little bit off track. I hear a lot of people talking about, you know, how bad the police are, and they are bad, but they're not giving any solutions. And I think people need to realize that the police are there primarily to protect property rights. And the sooner we eventually realize that, the sooner we can get people educated and realize that we need to just simply abolish the police. The police state we currently have is not working for us. It is working for the bourgeoisie. Whenever there's rioting, they always go out and they don't protect the people, they protect the property rights. And the sooner we have a unity of white and black unite and not this agreement policy, politics, we can finally change this country for the better.
Yeah, well, changing this country for the better seems like a fine thing. Again, we have an entire political party, the Republican Party, and a fair number of Democrats who seem to be more committed basically to getting rich, you know, to exploiting whatever situation they can to enhance their own power rather than fixing things.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Because in the case of the Republican Party, they have no guiding principles. In the case of those Democrats who have basically abandoned us, they're thrown in with the Republicans. We'll be back. Coming up on the Science Revolution, biodiversity is dying as Trump opens 5,000 square miles of the ocean to the free market. Dr. Lauren Waller joins us to discuss how and why native plants can sequester carbon better and longer. Plus, Jim Adams from the Alaska National Parks Conservation Association is here on why Trump is allowing hunters to kill bear cubs in their dens. Are big game hunters like Don Jr. gleefully heading to Alaska to kill baby animals again? And cultural economist Dr. Jacoba Williams talks about how studies show black deaths at the hands of law enforcement are linked to historical lynchings. Tune into the Science Revolution wherever you find great podcasts. And welcome back. Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, what's on your mind today?
Well, I wonder if you know exactly what Trump is doing, because I think I do.
Okay, what do you think he's doing?
I think he's trying to destroy this country before he gets out of office, because he's really mad at everybody here. I mean, the banks wouldn't lend him money. The Correspondents' Dinner 2011 embarrassed him terribly. And he's really mad. And you know how vindictive he gets when he's trying to even score.
Yeah, the point I was making in my tweet, you can find it if you just go over to Tom_Hartman and on Twitter, you can find it, was that what Armin, my friend Armin, who was literally there when Hitler committed suicide and who wrote a book about it and, you know, lived that horrible life. It took him almost 3 months after he fled the Führer bunker after Hitler's suicide to make his way to the American forces and surrender to the Americans. And that's how he ended up becoming a U.S. citizen. What Armin was saying was that Hitler wanted to take Germany down with him. Hitler basically said words to the effect of, "My people have failed me, my army has failed me, they all should die." And, you know, and many of them had already. And I'm looking at 105,000 dead Americans right now. I'm looking at Donald Trump urging police all across the country and urging governors to use violence against protesters. And I'm thinking I'm hearing the echo of this, Corky.
Yeah, I believe I am. I know he wants to destroy this country, period. Because that embarrassment he suffered, and the banks won't lend him money for his businesses. So he goes over to the Soviet Union. Now, I think there's a secret promise.
He goes over to Saudi Arabia. Yeah, I got it. Corky, thank you. We'll be back with more of the news and more of my thoughts and yours in this kind of national town hall meeting we have here every day on the Tom Hartman program. And in the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. Never was intended to be. It requires you. So get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.